good. Your secret's safe with me and all the PC Gamer podcast listeners. Please don't let that be the weird part in the beginning.
Episode 163 of the PC Gamer Podcast. It's February 5th. We're glad to be here with you. I'm your podcast host, Evan Lotti, and I'm joined by reviews editor Dan Tower of Defense Power Stapleton.
Hi, everybody.
By podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And by his cohort, Andy Salisbury.
Hello, hello.
And likewise by the venerable Josh Augustine.
Hey, hey.
All right. It's a really convenient day to have a podcast, apparently, because there's two major announcements, in my opinion, that came out this morning. First of all, that Battlefield 1943 is coming to PC. It's multi-platform. It's allegedly a downloadable-only title, sort of priced for that sort of release. 24-player multiplayer, allegedly only three maps. What do we make of this? Are we more excited about the announcement at all, or are we skeptical that it's multi-platform, that it's sort of more, less, you know, traditional retail title?
Well, there's got to be a little bit of skepticism there because, I mean, first of all, it's not what you traditionally think of as a full Battlefield game. It seems to be more along the lines of Battlefield Heroes, except, you know, in the more closer to the traditional Battlefield mode, but adopting the almost casual style of it. Also, it's you know, it seems to be paring down the size of the battles from 64 players down to 24, which is, you know, a pretty significant step down. I would guess that they're doing that so they don't have to design maps that would support 64 players, which has got to be a pretty significant undertaking. But it is kind of a downer for Battlefield players that are used to the bigger fights.
It's just such an interesting approach by EA. I'd sort of been saying before that, you know, they're taking Battlefield in a new direction, even before we knew about 43, but just to think that they're doing three iterations of the franchise in the same year, it seems like, I mean, they'd sort of be oversaturating the fans of that franchise or just shooter fans in general. I hope it works out, but you think it'd be in their interest to make 1943 that much more distinct from Bad Company 2, which is also coming to PC, we found out, and Heroes.
I mean, it does look fairly distinct. It's just not the scale to which PC gamers are used to getting a Battlefield game, and thus might be disappointing to a lot of people.
Yeah, I can see that happening, because my dad and I, actually, I've just been playing a lot of Battlefield 2 again lately, and I'm loving the fact that the battles are so big, and that, you know, now that I've got technology that is, you know, far beyond what the game was running on when it first came out, I can play it all really a lot smoother than I did at first, and I love the fact that there's so many players. Like, I'm not sure if I could see it the same way if it was just 24.
And there are far more people with broadband now, so you can actually get a good, you know, playable game at a high you know, speed without having a bunch of lag everywhere.
Yeah, like I know when I pick a server, it's got to have at least, you know, 30, 40 people before I want to jump in, because when I think of Battlefield, you know, the word Battlefield kind of, you know, begs for a lot of players.
Battlefields are big.
Yeah, it's not like a battle gated area.
Yeah.
So, Andy, you're sort of the Battlefield aficionado in our group, probably. What would they need to do other than, you know, casting out the 24 multiplayer, which 24-person multiplayer, which you kind of have to see in action to believe? What would they need to do? Like, what's on your wish list in terms of features or content for to be a successful Battlefield game?
It'd have to be a Battlefield game from, you know, like this decade, because Battlefield 2 is cool, but, I mean, with games like Crysis and whatnot coming out, and just how beautiful game. I mean, even Left 4 Dead, it's as simple as it is. You know, the zombies and all the characters have some pretty extreme detail going on. So it's, I don't know, if they could manage to pull that off on such a large scale, it'd be impressive. Because, I mean, Grand Theft Auto 4 is, you know, that game's got immense amounts of detail for how gigantic it is. And it's certainly got the multiplayer aspect, although, admittedly, it's tough to compare those two. But, you know, as far as detail goes, I'll probably go with that example.
Have you seen the video, Andy?
Yeah.
What did you think of how it looked?
It looked like just the animations of stuff, or the animations of people moving. Admittedly, it was really choppy because I think I was trying to share the stream with thousands of other people. But
it
sounds
dirty, by the way.
It's my idea of a good time. It looked a little Heroes-y to me, just on first impression. I mean, maybe I should watch it again, but just that was my first impression. Was, you know, I'm not really sure if that's something. Because, I mean, right. If I wanted to play Heroes, I would. And, I mean, I've given it a try. And it's I can understand the appeal, but it's just not my thing.
So I just rewatched the trailer here myself on my machine. It looks, you know, not like Battlefield, like Heroes-y, I think. It looks much more realistic than Heroes. It's not going for the you know, cartoony, stylized kind of thing. It is slightly stylized. But
how's
it,
that
but,
bad, though?
I kind of disagree. I don't think it's going for a Heroes-y vibe. I mean,
I'm not so sure they were going for it, but I just get that from it initially. But now that I'm thinking about it again, and I hear, you know, other people talking about it, I'm not so sure stylized would actually be such a bad thing. Should it kind of have even just a hint of that? Because, I mean, you know, it works for Team Fortress 2, but again, they're very different games. So I don't know. I'm mixed feelings. I think I'll have to see more or just watch it again.
I think.
No,
it's fine. Yeah, some of the animations really did resemble Heroes for me. It sounds really precise, but like the way the characters would sort of kick up their legs a little bit kind of resembled Heroes, and just the way the planes interacted, and the fact that I don't know how many Battlefield maps took place on like one sort of island that you could see at the same time, but a lot of the Heroes maps are sort of contained and.
Well, that map that the video is on is Wake Island. It's a very it's a very noticeable map from the first Battlefield game and Battlefield 2.
It's like the definitive map from Battlefield 42.
Yeah, and it's a great map. But I've played it for like 6 years now. Do I really want to play it again just 1 year later?
I like it in Battlefield 2 a lot.
Yeah, no, it's great in Battlefield 2 as well, but. Again, I played it in Desert Combat mod for Battlefield 1942. I don't know. It's like it's just been done, and it looks. I don't know what this game is. Like, what is it? Is it just a stopgap between Battlefield 3, or is there going to be a 3? I don't know. I hope
there's almost certainly going to be a 3. Why would they stop now? They've been very successful games for EA. So there's you know, they're expanding the franchise, kind of going off in these kind of, you know, slightly different directions, but just, you know, kind of a scattershot approach almost.
I hope it's just like a small little game that they're kind of just putting out for a digital, you know, distribution stuff only, you know, because that's the word where you're only going to be able to download it.
Yeah. And you know, they're doing the same thing with the Red Alert 3 expansion, Uprising, is download only. And I mean, we were talking to them about that when they came to show it off, and... And like they seem to think that they can make a pretty good pretty good impact that way, a pretty good, you know, reach a large number of people, because they say there might be a retail SKU later, but for now they can put it up online. It's cheaper for them to distribute that way, so it's cheap. They can sell it for cheaper, and so this will likely be a $20 game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it'll be cool to see what it is, but what it does look like is just a console game that I probably won't play. So,
well, why do you say it looks like a console game?
Because it's only 24 players. It's only got like 3 maps. It's only, I don't know, some of the animations in that movie didn't look very Battlefield.
The animations do look stylized, and they tend to do that in a lot of games. They try and make it look a little bit over exaggerated movements. Just to really, you know, really get the movement across, because it is very hard to get realistic human movements. But if they exaggerate it, you can tell exactly what everybody's doing from afar, and you know, it really gets the point across. So it is a slight departure from the hyper realism, or not even really hyper realism of the previous Battlefield games, but realistic approach, I guess.
Yeah, but Battlefield Bad Company sounded like a pretty interesting game. I never played it, but it might be a good thing that's Battlefield Bad Company 2 is going to come out for PC.
Mm-hmm.
So that
well, it's
be
always
cool.
Good. Yeah. I think it's always a good thing when more games come out for the PC.
Oh yeah, definitely. So that I'm kind of looking forward to. On the other hand,
so you just think that's better because it might be a more realistic approach.
It might just be a more fleshed out game. Like this game just seems like a small $20, you know, side project.
Right. I mean, it's not a full retail game, which like I said at the top, it might be disappointing to some people, but I think that you might be asking too much of it. I mean, it is a smaller thing. I think it still could be a lot of fun though. You know, it's just as long as you don't go into it expecting something that it's not supposed to be.
You're right. It'll just be like Wake Island revisited with better graphics.
It's true. Maybe we are holding up to kind of a strange
standard.
Right.
I mean, it seems like mostly an update of Battlefield 1942, except set in the Pacific. So I mean, it's not trying to be like a completely new thing, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, they're using the Bad Company 2 engine. That's probably part of the reason as well, that they want to utilize that tech while it's still fresh, while they still have familiarity with it, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just a way of them putting out more products, quality products using an engine while it is still, technologically on the high end. So I don't think they're like looking for an excuse to make a game on that. I think they want to make a bunch of slightly lower cost games, for them to make and put them out at a lower price for people to buy because of the economy being the way it is. They want to get people at a lower price point.
That's probably definitely the case. And speaking of things that are low price point or free, Left 4 Dead DLC on PC. We just got word today that is coming in the spring, according to Valve, along with the Source Development Kit, which will allow people to create their own levels, edit levels, create campaigns, potentially. And this will also be packaged with, well, I guess, the DLC, it's going to consist of a new mode called Survival Mode, which they didn't really release any details on, but we can sort of speculate on it a bit.
Isn't the whole game one big survival mode?
I imagine this will be something along the lines of barricading yourself in somewhere and then just seeing how long you can hold out.
Okay.
Right. Could be something.
If I had to guess, that's what I'd wager.
Yeah.
It could just be trying to stay alive as long as you can against increasing waves of zombies.
Well, the survival mode mod that somebody created a couple weeks ago or earlier in January, actually, it's actually really hardcore. There's took off your flashlight and replaced it with a laser dot. Melee less effective. You could only kill zombies with headshots.
Whoa.
Cool. I like that.
No in-game music. No special infected except for tanks at the end of stages. Slower survivors and zombies. Increased damage when hit from behind. So we're sort of speculating that there might be a siege mode where you encounter waves of zombies. I sort of think there's already a little bit of that in the campaign that people can play. I mean, the Nazi zombies mode in World of War, let you build barricades and whatnot, and that was fun for what it was.
And they're also talking about adding versus support for the other two campaigns that didn't have it. We always knew they were going to do that. That was just a matter of time.
Really want to do Dead Air on versus.
Yeah, right. It's reassuring.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, you walk through, you can see some really advantageous spots for infected.
It's a map that begs for you to play a hunter. It really is.
Yeah. It's kind of understandable that they probably had to make more tweaks to that level than No Mercy or anything else, I would imagine.
Yeah, true.
What kind of tweaks do you think they had to make?
I mean, balancing in terms of blocking off certain areas for exploits, and also it might even come down to resources. I mean, it seems like Dead Air has some really massive parts, even compared to No Mercy. The finale is one of them that would be kind of resource intensive. Like, could you even do the plane crash at the end of Dead Air for 8 players?
I'm guessing that for versus mode they would probably have the plane pre-crashed.
Yeah,
because there could be some wackiness there. Maybe somebody trying to pull somebody into the path of the plane with a smoker. Well, that would actually be kind of awesome.
That should be an achievement if you can pull that off.
Right.
But
literally, I guess.
Do you even do the finales in versus mode?
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
If you make it that far.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess I've just never made it that far.
It's funny with the plane crash in Dead Air. If you rush out the gate, you can actually make it to the tarmac and get hit by the plane. The most it'll do to you is 10 damage, and you sort of like ride this invisible wave that pretty fun.
It always went through me.
You should try it.
Yeah, I got it to go through me one time. It just, like, I wasn't even there.
And I never tried it because I didn't want to get hit by a plane.
Understandable. All right, another interesting news story. Really only one or two of us have played EVE Online, but we all know it's kind of the biggest multiplayer game in that all the people are on one server. There's, 50,000 people at last count, I think. So a lot of people are calling it the biggest event in EVE Online's history. It's certainly the biggest event of virtual galactic espionage in a game. Essentially, two of the bigger corporations in the game, Band of Brothers and what's the other one? Goonfleet, which is run by the people that go to the forumites at somethingawful.com. So the Goonfleet essentially got one of Band of Brothers, actually Band of Brothers' leader, to defect to Goonfleet. And of course, this person has control of all their money, all their planetary resources, and even the rights over the Alliance's name itself. And so they basically took all the resources in one fell swoop, all their territory. And
that is so cool. And that's what I always liked about EVE, just how genuinely player-run it was.
Well, I mean, the problem with being player-run is you're also subject to player griefing. That's basically what this is griefing on a massive scale.
You can grief in any game, though.
It's within the political system, though. Like, that's part of the game, espionage and spying. Like, there are people that are, like, directors of spying in the game. That's their role.
Right, but I mean, like, if I were playing and I got ripped off like that, I would want to stop playing that game.
Well, see, that's what makes this game different is one that I was reading forum posts about it where some people were saying the same thing, like, oh, they're going to go back and change the rules now. And the best response I saw was, like, EVE Online is about play big or go home. Like, you win big, but you lose big. It's a big risk. And so, obviously, it's not the game for everybody. But, I mean, you can lose a lot, but, I mean, you can gain a lot more than you could in any other MMO as well.
I wonder why the guy decided to switch sides. I mean, I got to think the game's been around for so many years that it has to do a little bit with maybe he got bored with his own alliance. Maybe he wanted to just make things interesting. There is the biggest expansion EVE is still forthcoming in, I believe, March. It's called Apocrypha. And they're adding, like, wormholes and this new race and these other elements. But I wonder why he made that decision to do it. Like, they couldn't have really given him an incentive.
Yeah, he already had all the money you can want, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah, probably just a change of pace. I played a similar game online for about 4 years, and after a while I ended up defecting to the pirate faction there too and taking a bunch of my corporation stuff with me. Just because, I mean, after a while, I mean, you just need to change of pace, as much as it sucks, I mean, for the people. And the most interesting part to me was I logged in and I'm part of a neutral faction in EVE, and so I got a message from my leader, you know, explaining the situation and telling all of us to stay out of the space, because when Band of Brothers got broken up, all of their stations and player-owned structures were unanchored and unclaimed. And so it's just like a mad, like, gold rush where looters and pirates are just rushing wherever Band of Brothers owned anything and trying to steal everything they can. And so that's what I think is really interesting, is just all kind of... It sort of is as if a big town just kind of... The police went away, and then the looters and everybody are just going crazy, having a field day.
This strikes me as just a situation where somebody tracks down in real life the guy who did this and kicks the crap out of him. It's just waiting to happen. You know, it's like there have been altercations in real life over like swords in Diablo or EverQuest. You know, just, you know, people getting pissed off at somebody they live near or know. Doing something with their online possessions, and they'll, you know, it'll come down to violence or I guess there was some incident in Asia. I think it was a Korean thing where some guy like stabbed somebody over stealing his sword or something. This is just begging for somebody to get, you know, at least kicked in the nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, I've read way too many articles about spouses cheating on each other's virtual spouses in Second Life to that effect.
Yeah, and a lot of these big guilds, like, people share phone numbers, so they can, like, send text messages and stuff, so I hope nobody has this guy's phone number, or else he's just gonna get hammered.
Right, and how, like, how can you rise to that level of prominence in an organization, like a player organization like that, and without having somebody kind of know who you are?
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure EVE has sort of a meetup every year where some of its more hardcore fans get together, and it'll be interesting to I'm going to try and track down when that is and see if anything goes down.
Like burning effigies?
The space parking lot, yeah. But I mean, I don't play as many MMOs as you guys do, but to a certain extent, I mean, once you're done with the mission content and raids and everything, doesn't it naturally become a player-driven experience where you're more interested in the metagame and your rivalries, your alliances, your friends than anything else? It's a social experience at that point.
Sort of. I mean, it totally depends on the game, because stuff like WoW, I mean, there isn't a lot of... All the PvP is done where they mix servers together, so you're never really facing like the same people, and so you don't really develop that sort of interaction unless you actively like go on the forums and like troll each other or something. But for the most part, unless the game actively encourages it, like Eve does, where Dan was talking about, where this is basically griefing, but Eve CCP says that griefing is totally okay. It doesn't break the rules. So.
Right, but I mean, traditionally, a game with a lot of griefing, like, people don't play it anymore because they don't like to be griefed all the time. It's like, just let me play the game without harassing me all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely a niche, because, I mean, some people love to be griefed and some people love to grief. They like that kind of power back and forth. And
yeah, they so, like I mean, the possibility of that to yeah. happen.
I don't know of anybody who I've ever known who has enjoyed being griefed.
But the thrill of knowing that you can be griefed rather than just being perfectly safe all the time, I know a lot of people that like that.
Like looking on, just having to look over your shoulder and everything all the time. I mean, ask anybody who rolled a PvP server in World of Warcraft, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I did because I like the possibility of being able to just walk out and, you know, into the wilderness and kick some butt. Yeah, not going to get bleeped this time, Andy Bauman. And, you know, the possibility of it happening to me, you know, having to go out there and bring your friends just in case. Like, the possibility of it is actually a lot of fun because then you're not just going to go, you know, into a battleground and win or lose depending on what random teammates you've got. You know, you've actually, you're competing with people on your server that you're going to talk with on the realm forums and stuff in a way that, you know, is really going to affect everybody.
Well, I mean, PvP is one thing. I mean, that's you know, to look out for these guys. You know, watch out for the other team because their goal is to come and get you. But this is something different. This is somebody within your own team. This is like team killing in Battlefield or anything. You know, it's somebody stabbing you in the back that's not supposed to happen, and it makes it less fun as a result of it because they are making it harder for you to enjoy the game.
It's hard, but it's also such. I mean, it's such an interesting setup for something more interesting to happen, though. If you know the remnants of Band of Brothers, if they can stick together, if they can create, you know, sister alliances, and I mean, they're sort of the underdog now. They can come back and maybe infiltrate Goonfleet in the same way, or you know, try to harass them in certain ways.
Yeah. I think it's interesting for us on the you know. Outside looking in, I still, you know, and you know, I don't play this game, so, and this is probably why, because I feel this way, because I think to have that happen to you is like, oh, that's interesting, but that sucks, you know, it's like, I think the sure. suckiness would far outweigh my level of interest.
It's not so much going back on the thing about PvP, it's not that it's, you know, it's just PvP, it's the prospect of that being able to happen. I mean, people who play this game and that have gotten as high up as they are and that are in these big organizations that are directly affected, I think always knew this was a possibility and, you know, expected that something like this could happen, although they suspected it didn't. But, you know, everybody walks into the situation knowing.
Yeah.
You know, when you go play football, you know you have a good chance you might get your neck broken if you get hard enough, but, you know, you
but not
go
by your
and you
own
play.
Team.
And who knows? It's possible. Maybe a hit happens somewhere that, you know, didn't mean to happen, but, you know.
But that would be an accident.
Right, but I'm just using it as an example of a possible outcome, not so much it would happen this way.
Right, I'm just saying, in football, you don't have your own team gunning for you.
But you do in WoW, actually. This isn't very different from someone looting from their own, or stealing from guild banks. I mean, you can have people in your guild steal stuff from you and just rip off the whole guild. It's not that this is just a larger scale, which is what Eve is all about. It takes the MMO stuff, takes the interesting social aspects, and just blows it up to a big scale where you can see the super highs of it and the super lows of it.
Yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense.
That's
I could have said it better.
Yeah. I agree with the theory. It's kind of neat, but in practice, I think it would suck.
anywho, we'll keep our eye on how that develops, if it develops, if it undevelops in EVE Online. So, keeping with our really fun, I thought, audio quiz last week for in-game weapons, we are, courtesy of Josh, who recorded some excellent sound clips of assault rifles this week. We're going to play back 7 in-game weapons firing away for you guys to see if you can use your ears to guess which games they belong to. And if you want to write down these game names, if you have a pen and paper handy, and what we're dealing with.
See, now that you told them I recorded it, I can't just say them all right away and look really awesome.
I know, right? Well, you could, like, do it.
Yeah, you could do it through me. Yeah. I could be your proxy awesome.
All right.
Yeah, Josh, no IMing anybody. So the game names are Call of Duty 4, Far Cry 2, Counter-Strike 1.6, whoa, Grand Theft Auto 4, Fallout 3, Left 4 Dead, and Team Fortress 2. And Andy, fire away when ready.
I'm going to say that sounds GTA 4-ish to me. But can we hear it again?
It could be, although, yeah, that's a tough one because it could also be the one of the weapons in CS 1.6.
True. No, it's definitely GTA 4.
Yeah, I hear that. That and the reload is really fast. Like, in that game, to reload the Colt, he just, like, pulls the hammer on the back, you know?
Right. All right, let's do number 2.
Number 2.
Sounds mounted.
Let's hear it again.
I don't know. This one's hard.
Nah, maybe I'm wrong.
It could be a gun that I haven't played with yet in Far Cry 2.
It's probably the most distinct one of our group, I think.
If you know what it is.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's either Far Cry or Fallout. I think probably Fallout. Let's hear it one more time. Yeah, I'm going to go with Fallout.
Yeah, I'll go with Fallout. I like that.
All right. Number Trace.
Trace. Okay.
Counter-Strike Source.
1.6 or whatever.
Source isn't in here.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
It's Counter-Strike, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only 1.6. And whenever possible, I use an M16.
Yeah.
So, just to keep it consistent.
Oh, wait.
I should all be very familiar with this one.
That's Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
Wait, let's go back. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely know what that is.
What is that?
L4D.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Okay,
in my mind.
Definitely. And then this is Counter-Strike.
I don't know, I haven't played Counter-Strike in so long, I'll just take your word for that.
Okay, next one.
The clip moving in and out there is really distinctive.
Definitely.
Play that one more time.
I'm going to say Far Cry.
Definitely got some 3-shot burst action.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it's definitely an M16 of some kind, but I have no idea.
I guess it could also be Call of Duty. I don't really remember Call of Duty sounds very well.
Yeah, it could be Call of Duty 4 as well.
Well, let's say Call of Duty. Take our chances.
All right.
It's kind of a wussy one. What have we checked off so far?
We've checked off Fallout 3, Left 4 Dead, Counter-Strike 1.6, and Call of Duty. So what remains is...
Didn't we also say GTA 4?
Yes, so okay. TF2, GTA 4, we said, and I guess
Far Cry 2
remaining. Yeah.
Well, let me hear it one more time. Kind of sounds cartoony. I'm going to go TF2.
Yeah, but that's totally not something from TF2.
It's very automatic.
Isn't there one? Isn't there an automatic gun in TF2?
There is.
Well, that doesn't sound like it to me, at least.
Hmm. Well, you guys are much more expert in that than I am, so I'll defer.
What were the remaining options? Are we allowed?
TF2 and Far Cry, I believe.
I'll have to go with Far Cry then, because I'm not hearing TF2 in that one.
Yeah. Far Cry.
All right, the last one.
Whoa, okay.
Okay, that's kind of GTA-ish to me.
Yeah, that was definitely GTA.
Okay, so what was the one that we labeled as GTA before?
I think it was the first one, wasn't it?
First one.
Yeah.
Should we go back?
Oh, duh, that's Team Fortress 2.
There it is.
That's okay. That's definitely the sniper.
Sounds like the sniper's one, yeah.
That's right.
I don't know why I couldn't figure that out before. It just had a different quality to it. I don't know.
It took you guys a bit, but you definitely sorted them all out, actually.
Oh, we got them all?
Really?
That was the Team Fortress 2 Grease Gun at the beginning. Fallout 3 Assault Rifle, number 2. Left 4 Dead, number 3. Counter-Strike, 1.6, number 4. M16.
Was it the Chinese Assault Rifle? Or the...
Yes. Okay. Believe so. I think Josh recorded that, actually.
It's just the Assault Rifle. Just regular.
And then the default... M16 from Call of Duty 4, Far Cry 2, I'm not sure which weapon that was number 6, and GTA number 7. I think you'd even hear like the mission icon or the map sound.
Yeah, that little bling.
7. So, well done, you guys know your bullets.
I'd high five if I could, but I'm nowhere near any of you.
So we're a little short on questions this week, and just want to use that opportunity as a reminder to continue to submit questions for our podcast. The number you want to call is 877-404-1337, extension 724, or you can drop us an MP3 at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Again, we'd love to air those for you guys. Just want to get some good ones in, so fire away at that phone number and address. So I guess that brings us to playlist. Josh Augustine, what you been playing these days?
I've been playing a lot of WoW. I've been getting back into Warhammer after the live expansion announcement, so that's fun. And I played a bit of Red Alert 3, and so that's really fun. I'm getting through the Soviet campaign, which is as excellent and ridiculously over the top as I had hoped.
Yeah, glad you're enjoying it. I just completed that last weekend myself.
The Soviet campaign or the full thing?
Soviet, yeah.
Yeah, they do ramp up in difficulty. The Allied is harder than the Soviet, and the Japanese is harder than the Allied, mostly because the Japanese is really kind of the finesse race in that, or faction rather, and there's a little bit more to building their bases and using their units correctly, because they have a bunch of different modes, or, you know, radically different modes. They just have two modes, but using them well takes a little bit more practice.
There's some really interesting sort of cost benefit happening with the Japanese, especially. A lot of their units are super versatile in that they're able to fly or go on land or go in water, but their buildings take longer to produce because you have to, you know, roll out these little, I don't know what they're called, sort of...
Builder vehicles, whatever.
Vehicles, and then they have to build up slowly, and so...
But it doesn't matter if you can't just say, I want to build this here, and it pops up. You have to actually navigate your little builder vehicle to that spot, and then it unpacks. So it's a little bit... It's different, and I do like asymmetry in basic mechanics like that. It makes things more interesting when you're going from one side to another. You know, it's like you like in a lot of RTSs where they don't have a lot of asymmetry, you play one side and then you play the other side, and it's like exactly the same as having played the first side. The World in Conflict standalone expansion had this problem because all the units look a little different. You know, just like, you know, Allied and Soviet units look different in real life, but their capabilities are almost identical. So it's like, if it weren't for the voiceovers, I would have like often forgotten which side I was fighting for. Whereas with with Red Alert 3 and you know, going back to StarCraft with like the Zerg, they had a radically different way of building their buildings by sending a drone that would grow into a building, which is very very similar to what the Japanese do in Red Alert 3. It just shakes things up when you go from playing as one side to another side. You have to relearn things and you have to kind of rethinking your whole approach to the game as a result of that, which I find very interesting.
Definitely. What's your favorite structure or unit in the game, Josh or Dan?
Josh?
So far, I love the bears, just because as we were talking yesterday, how you can shoot them out and make them parachute. I mean, there's nothing better than a parachuting bear.
Yeah, the bullfrog is pretty cool. It's a Soviet transport that it's amphibious and it has a kind of a cannon that launches the units infantry units out of the transport over obstacles, and they parachute down. Of course, they're vulnerable to anti-aircraft fire when they're doing that, so it's not overpowered, but it's a very clever unit all around. Favorite unit? That's a good question. And it's hard not to like the Kirov Japanese Soviet blimp.
Those things are devastating. I always build like 8 of them when I only actually need 2, just because they're so destructive.
Right. And they're very expensive too, so you don't want to spend all of your resources doing that, otherwise you're going to get pulled over.
Well, I would like to mention too that the Japanese engineer is hilarious. The description says it's like a sniveling, unbearable creature, and whenever you talk with him, he's just like, "Yes, whatever you say."
He's an otaku, basically.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Myself, I can't really pick out a unit, but I'm just in love with the combination of Soviet abilities, the way you can layer them, the magnetic satellite they can use to pick up units off the field. So you can just kind of, if something's in your way, you don't like a cruiser or a tank that's bugging, you can just pick it up into space. It sucks up in space. And then you can use the other ability, the orbital drop, which by default just like send down all these satellites to do damage, but it'll also send down any of your enemy units that you picked up with the magnetic satellite to do extra damage. So it's this interesting reversal where, you know, an enemy can send in this huge unit, you can pick it up, and then throw it right back at him for extra damage. It's really fun and hilarious.
I also really like the Allied air power a lot. Their heavy bombers are a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah, the sentry bombers, those things are rough. But yeah, I guess that begs the question, how about yourself, Dan? What have you been playing?
I've been trying to get back into Fallout 3, which has been freezing up on me a lot, and impeding my progress towards playing the DLC that just came out. I still haven't gotten to it. It could be Windows 7 related, so you know it's hard to blame the game too much. But I suspect it's because it was freezing up on me under Vista as well, but not as much. I suspect it's probably got to do with my onboard sound setup. I'm just using the sound from my motherboard, so it could have to do with that. I'm gonna try putting a sound card in there and see if that makes a difference. But yeah, from most of what I've read online, it seems to be sound issues cause a lot of the freezes that people run into in that one. It's really unfortunate, and we have gotten a lot of like several emails from readers who are like, "How could you give Fallout 3 Game of the Year? You know, it's this buggy mess and blah blah blah." And yeah, it does have some bugs, but some people run into them and others don't. So it's hard to blame it for that. And at the same time, we do feel bad for everybody who is finding it unplayably crashy. And it's just one of the natures of the beast, unfortunately.
Have you tried out the Garden of Eden creation kit at all?
I have not. Based on the Oblivion modding stuff, it all seems pretty complex, more so than I have time to really get into. So I leave the modding of that kind of game to the more capable hands of the avid modding community.
Indeed, and actually, Dan, if you're ever suddenly getting interested to do so, we do have a little write-up on how to create your own vault in our extended play section of our April issue. So just to plug that a little bit. Andy Bauman, what you up to?
Unfortunately, my gaming hasn't been really going off this week. The only thing I remember playing is Peggle Knights. I mean, which isn't bad because it's a great game, but the fact that I haven't been able to get anywhere in Far Cry 2 is disappointing to myself.
Why haven't you been able to get anywhere?
I don't know. I guess Far Cry 2 just seems like you get a mission randomly or whatever. You go do it, and it just seems like there's no end, and you have to drive all the way the hell across the thing. Like, I don't know if I'm that engrossed in the setting to like force myself to play it, which is terrible when you force yourself to play something.
How far into it are you? How many
hours
have
you spent? Not that far at all. So yeah, I'm still trying to get a lot of weapons by doing little side missions where the delivery truck just sits there and waits for you to blow it up. Or the convoy.
I've been told by numerous people, and you know, I played like half an hour or two, and then like, it didn't really grab me, and moved on to something else. But I've been told by numerous people that you have to play a couple hours before it really gets you.
I really like open world games, but I also really like story driven games. So this is kind of like a weird. It's not quite as story focused as GTA 4. But the open world is there, so it's like, I don't know what to do. Do I just go around and shoot my guns in the air? Because that's like all I end up doing is just like shooting the guns in the air and watching the animations and stuff. And then I'm like, oh, well, I just wasted an hour.
Well, I'd be interested to hear your impressions after another hour or two in the game.
Yeah, I'm definitely, because there's got to be a reason why people gave it such a high score in a lot of the reviews, and everybody loves it so much. So I'm it'll be there, just hasn't been there yet, so...
Right. I wanted to read a text message I received last night that I received from our former EIC, Greg Viederman. He said, I finally loaded up Sins of a Solar Empire and cannot believe how awesome it is. So I had been nagging him for months to try that out. Because he does like RTS games, and you know, he was a big Total Annihilation fan and Supreme Commander fan. So I had been nagging him to try it, and he's always kind of resistant to try something that you're nagging him to try. So I stopped nagging him a while ago, and now he finally got around to it, and he's loving it. So
and he loved Galactic Civilization too, like a lot, didn't he?
I don't remember him being a Galciv player.
I don't know.
But that's possible. But he did pick a pretty good time to start playing it because next week, on the 11th, is that next week or is that the week after? A week from yesterday is the 11th, and that's when Sins of a Solar Empire Entrenchment comes out. That's a download only expansion from Stardock. So I'm looking forward to that to jump back into that game. I'm sure it'll suck up a lot more of my time.
That's $10, correct?
Yeah.
Very nice. Andy Salisbury. Shoot.
I, as I've mentioned before, dove back in headfirst to Battlefield 2. So I've been playing that a fair amount and enjoying the, just the size of that game. It's fun just sometimes just to hop in a helicopter and check the whole map out. And then other than that, I've been playing a fair amount of WoW. I changed my mains from a rogue to a hunter because being a rogue isn't that fun to me anymore. So
when you say you changed your main, do you mean you just decided this guy's going to be my main character now?
Yeah, like I went to the I went to the other officers in my guild and I was like, look guys, I'm really not enjoying rogue anymore and we're low on hunters, so is it cool if I make the switch? And they were like, yeah, if you can, you know, become well enough geared so we're not just going to carry you through content. And I became well enough geared, and now I'm raiding on it. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy the class.
So you already had this guy up to 80 or whatever, right?
He was like 63, but okay. They made leveling really easy, and I was able to get him to 80 in probably about a week.
Wait, who made leveling easy?
Blizzard did.
Really?
Blizzard did. Yeah, because I mean they kind of nerfed the experience you needed in Outland, and that was already a really really great just. Area as a whole, just Outland for leveling. I really thought they did a great job with it. And then Northrend I thought was even better. Like there was never a point, like with Outland, I think I've said this before, where I was like, oh man, I really don't want to be playing this place. Like each quest was actually a lot of fun. I mean, it might just be, you know, I mean, on the surface you're killing 10 of these things, but they do really good job of grouping quests together to make sure you're not just killing things coming back, you know, you have to go out and then you know, grab these items that are littered around this area, and then this kind of, you know, tiger will drop such and such claw. It's pretty cool.
Why would they make the leveling easier? Because I mean, to me,
so
like,
people can catch up.
Right, but at the same time, isn't that diminishing the value of Lich King?
A little bit, but you got to take the good with the bad, because I mean, also the good being the Death Knights. You know, people are rerolling these things to level 55, and you know, they're going to want to get up to speed as quick as they can. And I think Blizzard's goal isn't to make people feel like they've summited this mountaintop. I think their goal is just to make sure that everybody can be engaged and enjoy the game as much as the next guy can.
It seems to me first of all, I don't really understand the appeal of continuing to play when you're not earning experience points. To me, that's kind of the end of it. I mean, I know there are new dungeons to raid and stuff like that, but it's like I lose my momentum at that point.
That's what it is for me, is the raiding. I love the teamwork aspect of it. Knowing that I get in there with, you know, 24 other people and we put in tons of work and bash our head against the wall for a while, but eventually we can, you know, have the fact that we've downed this boss as a group to show to other people kind of as bragging rights, really. And that's, you know, more than enough for me.
See, I'm kind of like you, Dan. I get stuck. Once I hit 80, like, I'll play for a bit, but then I'll usually just start another character, and that's why I have, you know, 8 different, you know, level 70 characters or whatever, just because I raid every now and then, but I'm kind of like you. I just get bored, so either I just start a new character in WoW or start a new character in some other game.
Yeah. It kind of feels like I'd be wasting my time, you know? It's like I could be earning experience points with a different character, but with this guy, I'm just kind of spinning my wheels.
I don't know. I enjoy it, like, knowing that I to me, when I hit max level, that's almost the beginning of the game for me, because then I can start doing all the high-end PvP, like all those, you know, battlegrounds and arenas and whatnot, and going for Gladiator and just, you know, going for every little accomplishment that I can. It's not just hitting level 80, it's accomplishing these other things once you've hit level 80, because they've got all those achievements too, which are a lot of fun to go after. And then there's also just the little, you know, personal achievements you can get, like getting Gladiator and getting the mount from that, and you know, just kind of proving you're the best in the PvE or the PvP spectrum of the game.
Yeah, they do a good job of making there be a lot of things that you can only do once you're 80, like arena. Yeah. So
that's why I do it. Like, I love those parts of the game. It's really fun. It's really competitive, and I've always been pretty competitive, so I love it. It's a lot of fun.
It's funny that you mentioned a bit ago how your guild mentioned to you, like, okay, as long as you can get, you know, geared up enough. When Gary Widow was up here a week or so ago, he was talking about his WoW experience. He's not playing Lich King as much right now, because he feels that when he wants to get in a party or link up with people to do raids or whatever, he feels like there's this weird judgment that's sort of analogous to like a high school experience, where people are like actively making fun of his sword, and like laughing at him, like making fun of his equipment, and like mocking the fact that he would want to be in a group with them because he's not geared up well enough.
Well, that's just people on the internet. I mean that's going to happen.
Is that kind of commonplace? Like, people judge each other's equipment?
It depends who you're playing with.
People. Okay.
Because I've always felt personally in a lot of situations in that game that the skill will outweigh the gear. And I know that's not a common sentiment, but you know, I definitely am willing to give somebody a chance if they're in, you know, in queue to get in this group. So for me personally, I don't do that, but I've seen it happen. It's about as common as, you know, having somebody in real life say that they can't, you know, I can run a faster mile than you, or, you know, I mean, I know that probably doesn't happen that often, but just for the sake of example.
Yeah,
you know, that's probably, yeah.
It just struck me as funny. He said something, to paraphrase him, like, you know, I play these games to get away from that stuff, to sort of escape and like feel in control and have fun and socialize with people and not have, you know, sort of real world social conventions recreated in that space.
I think I might be a little more sheltered then too, because I've been in this guild for a long time.
Sure.
And I mean, I do run the occasional, you know, just pickup group with people out on the server, especially when I was first gearing up my hunter. And I didn't have that happen, but at the same time too, I've got this guild that will, you know, run me through the hardest dungeons to help me get gear if they're not doing anything else. So I think I might be a bit more sheltered than he is, but I think it's just, you know, it's subjective. Everybody can have a different experience. Well, you know, not everybody, because there's, what, 14 million now or something? But 11. Wow, I was totally off. 3 million, give or take. 12, is it? Really?
Yeah, I heard 12 talked about recently.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, kudos to them. But yeah, I think it's just subjective. It can happen in any other game, I think, just as easily.
Yep.
Counter-Strike Source comes to mind.
Well, yeah, but in that, you don't have persistent equipment that people can look at and judge unworthy of joining them.
Yeah, but say you buy a weapon loadout that's not favorable. Like, I've seen one guy got absolutely ostracized for buying an MP5 and a Desert Eagle. Because, you know, it's like this hand cannon and then this weak little pea shooter, but they've switched roles from primary.
But that's you know, judging somebody based on their knowledge. You know, it's like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. Whereas somebody who is you know, in WoW and just hasn't gotten like a super duper sword yet.
Yeah, time investment.
Yeah. It's a little bit different.
Well, I don't know. I think you're right on that one.
Anywho.
Yeah.
I've got a level 34 hunter if you want to buy him from me from 4 years ago. His name's Jizandy.
Reported. I'm reporting you right
Troll.
Now. That is.
If your guild needs some extra hunters, he's been sitting around for a while doing nothing.
We do not advocate gold farming or selling of characters, Andy.
Oh,
I'm
reporting
you right now.
I'll give them to you for free.
Email lounge.
And if some money were to appear in Andy's mailbox, he wouldn't, he would look the other way.
Yeah.
Look the other way while pulling it out of his mailbox, yeah.
Right.
Anywho, as for myself, I've been playing much more TF2 than Left 4 Dead, even though I play Left 4 Dead every night almost. Sort of because we recruited a few new people into our TF2 clan and league ladder, so we're looking to be more active and playing matches. We have one on Sunday and this map called CTF Chaos, which is pretty fun. So looking forward to getting back into the more competitive groove of things, I guess, along with playing more Red Alert.
And how did you find the move to make crits less lucky?
I've played every night since that update came out, and we've sort of speculated within our group that it's to set up whatever the new scout weapons are to sort of balance them, that they might be more higher rate of fire to sort of counteract the percentage of crits. Yeah, just to sort of put this in context, Valve rolled out some updates for Team Fortress 2 this week and last week to sort of set up for the scout update, which we're expecting next week but isn't officially announced, the scout class update that'll probably roll out a new map and new weapons for the character. But yeah, addressing the crits equation, which they sort of change. How can I break this down? And initially, it was sort of, it wasn't as skill-based, where it was a dice roll, essentially, where the more you fire, the more opportunities you have to get that critical hit, whether you're a demo or a soldier or a heavy. But now it's sort of based more on, there's a lower base percentage for a crit, but it's more based in how much damage you've done within the last 20 seconds. So as you do more damage to people, you sort of have a higher percentage of dealing more critical hits with your next attack.
So boil that down for and just like, what is the overall effect of the change?
The overall effect is crits are more skill-based than luck-based, in that as you do more damage, you are more likely to get a critical hit. I've found it to be okay. It sort of puts... I like the sense of like, okay, I know I've done some more damage, maybe now I should make an aggressive move and hope that the next rocket I put in this group of three people will, you know, crush them all. I think it makes more sense for competitive play and other stuff, so we'll see how it pans out moving forward. Really, really interested to see what they're going to do with the scout update next week.
My understanding was that's how it was originally, is that the more damage, like it was a positive feedback loop, as they called it in the commentary, where
yes,
like...
That,
the more damage you're doing, the more likely you're critting, but they're just going to put in less crit chances now is how it is, and more rockets or something like that. Like you get more ammo, but you have less chance of a crit or something.
Well, they gave the soldier more rockets, yeah, but you're right, that equation was part of it, but it's now more part of it.
Oh, so it's even...
It's before.
Okay.
So luck is really only 2% of the equation. Like, you have a base percentage of 2%. Per attack or second of shooting your weapon if you're heavy. Anyway, lots of
cool semantics
that are interesting for people that play TF2, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the cool thing about TF2 and sort of the bad thing is that when you're not doing well, there's sort of things in the game to keep you from not doing well. When you're doing well, there's things in the game to keep you keep doing well. So it's like this interesting highs and lows that you get.
Yeah, they use that phrase very frequently in the commentary, highs and lows, and also in Left 4 Dead, I think. So, thanks very much for joining us, guys. We'd encourage you to subscribe to our magazine. Just head on over to gamesradar.com/PC and take a look on the left side of the page for the subscribe link. And with thanks to our PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Evan Lotti reminding you that no place is safe during the zombie apocalypse, only safer. See you next week, guys. Sorry for all the technical issues. We'll take a hammer to them.
Hammer them out?
Yeah, dude, percussive maintenance. Haven't you ever heard of that?
I saw a guy fix his TV with a like whiffle bat one time because some of the pixels weren't responding, so we just...
Oh, that no, Australian
yeah.
guy?
Yeah, batting away around the border, and it just came back.
It was like, righto, chaps, this is how we fix a TV in Australia. Like,
it just goes to town on his bat.
This big, like, black bar running down. Like, he's trying to, like, whack-a-mole his TV.
You call so that a wiffle bat? This is a wiffle bat.
In retrospect, they're limited graphics. Yeah. But, you know, I
what the
why they do that.
Who was that?
I think that was Dan.
I don't know. I was muted.
Okay.
What happened?
There's some serious mic action going on.
Hey. I think I know where the sound issues are coming from now, mister.
It was probably me the whole time. I was just like, guys, stop making all these noises.
It was weird. Dan's for a while would get to the point where it would just like progressively just get louder, you know?
I know.
Like there's just like a rainstorm on a tin roof just like right above him.
But someone's mic was like moving around. Like I was like, what the hell?
Was that me?
Fine. So I'd like to see something. I mean, there are already some built-in siege...
What is that?
Back. It sounds like wind is blowing into the mic or something. Okay, it's gone. It's back.
Okay, it's back. I just muted and unmuted. What the hell is... That's weird.